Hey, everybody. Welcome to my show, Friday PM. My name is Luigi Scarcelli. Today, we have a very interesting show. We have Greg Arion. He's coming to us from Zoom in Rhode Island. Isn't that you're in Rhode Island currently?
Yes, I'm in Rhode Island, but my full name, first name, Gregory. Greg is just for Facebook, you know.
Right. Greg is just for Facebook. Gregory Arion is zooming in from Rhode Island. Gregory is a filmmaker. He's a violinist. Has a very interesting story, and we wanted to talk a lot more about it. So instead of me talking too much about myself, I'll let you introduce yourself a little bit. Greg, why don't you start out by telling us, you know, where you were born and kind of that story a little bit.
Okay. So actually, I'm third generation of musician in our family. So I grew up in a musical family, you know. My grandfather, he was a folk musician, and my father was great musician. He just passed away 3 years ago. He played a very old Eastern and instrument called kemencha. I'm Armenian from Azerbaijan. So Armenian origin, and the Azerbaijan, it's a republic of former Soviet Union, which disappeared, you know that, in 91. So I grew up in Azerbaijan, being Armenian. I went to music school for 11 years. They called special school for gifted musician, musical school, you know. So I graduated there for 11 years. And after that, I went to conservatory and studied there for 5 years. Graduated in 1987 and received a master's degree on music. So, but after that, in 1 year, it started, you know, conflict between Azerbaijan and Armenian people living in Azerbaijan. So the problem was because the rising issues over Nagorno-Karabakh, which is historical Armenian territory and populated by mostly Armenian, like 95%. So what happens, they start doing continue doing genocide. And they start killing Armenians in Baku, in Sumgayit, that's the second city in Azerbaijan. So they start killing Armenians, so we have no choice. We have to flee. We fled from there. And so we stay in Armenia for a couple years. And you know that earthquake happened in Armenia back to 1988. That's the year we escape from Azerbaijan. So we went to Armenia, and in Armenia, it was very hard situation. And my mom just heard that USA government accepting Armenian refugees from Azerbaijan. And that way we apply for that. And after 2 years, probably in 91, we came to USA. So that's the, in shortly I can describe that. But after that, so all our families, we came here. And after that, I went back to already, not Soviet Union, because Soviet Union collapsed in 91. I went back and in Russia, actually. And I was working in the orchestras, you know, symphony orchestra for many years then. Because of family situation, I had to stay there until I was coming back and forward, you know. But I was working in Moscow Symphony Orchestra as a concertmaster. I played the concerts, all that stuff. But I feel that something, it's not place where I want to stay, you know. I always was thinking to coming back to USA.
And I had a couple quick questions because we don't want to go too far too fast. So tell the viewers who don't really know, because it is interesting. I have a friend of mine, and he's been on the show, from Rwanda. And I think some people even know about the genocide in Rwanda. But it's very interesting that you're almost saying really not that much of a similar time. I mean, maybe a decade earlier that was when a lot of this stuff was going on in Armenia, that has, you know, has been a very political football here in the U.S., because a lot of people who have a lot of power, I think sometimes the prime minister of Turkey, people who don't want that to be that well known, have kind of swept this issue under the rug a little bit. That was a pretty big genocide and ethnic cleansing and things that was going on in Armenia by the Turkish, by the Russian. Who? What was that all about a little bit?
Oh, sure, yeah. You know, the thing is, actually, even today, they still bombarding Armenian territory, not Nagorno-Karabakh no more. They took it away from historical Armenia, you know. They took it, like Russia, allies with Turkey and Azerbaijan. Azerbaijan, you know, the Azerbaijan people and Turkey, they speak same language. They're almost the same nation, but two countries. So they on influence of Erdogan and Putin at the same time, because what they try to do, I think, I'm not his historian, but I'm practitioner. So I see what is going on. Something going on which actually was exist even 100 years ago when everybody knows about Armenian genocide, right? Mm-hmm. Execution in Turkey. But let me put this way. Now the same thing is going on in historical Armenian territory. And in Armenia, because the Armenia, you know what they did? The first thing they did, Bolsheviks like Lenin, Stalin, and Atatürk, you know, the Atatürk, it's of head of Turkey at that time. They cut all Armenia on a pieces, and they give it to Azerbaijan. Like we have a territory, Nakhchivan and Nagorno-Karabakh. It's always been Armenian population, and it's historical part of Armenia. So they split Armenian territory among Azerbaijan, and actually now, what is going on now in current days, they try to do the same thing as they did 100 years ago, but now they try to demolish all Armenians from Armenia.
Yeah.
Not Nagorno-Karabakh, but exactly in Armenia, because the Azeri troops now on Armenian territory, they do bombardment, they do rocket missile strikes. And what I can say, this is because I think the Kremlin and that regime in Moscow supports that actions.
Right.
They negotiate with Erdogan, with Turkey, with Azerbaijan President Aliyev, and they try to do that. But the problem we have in Armenia, because we have a puppet government, they run by Moscow. So they do things against their own people. They do things against Armenian people.
Well, and let me ask you that question based on that, because, you know, everybody knows about what goes on in the Ukraine, but they don't know as much about what you're talking about. And is that, I mean, not that it's not so bad about what goes on with the Ukrainians. We have very much sympathy for them, too. But do you wonder why they became the topic for everybody to rally behind,
yeah,
but not you? Do you?
Exactly. I have answer for that. Because actually, the war against Ukraine, it's a secondary. First, it was against Armenia in 2020, 2 years ago. They started the war, 44 days, it's last Azerbaijan-Turkey aggression against Armenia, back to 2 years ago. And after that, they start doing against Ukraine. But Ukraine have, I think, advantage because their president stands for their own people, despite what Armenia has now, you know, because in Armenia government, they go against their own people. They, you know, they're working as, how you say that, satellites or, so they're working for Kremlin, they're working for Putin.
And do you feel like it is almost in that sense that where this kleptocracy, as they call it, right, which is a theft and a corruption, that now the Soviet Union still exists, but it's even more behind the hidden curtain. and it's with the bribes and the money and the offshore money, because that's probably what you're saying, is that the puppet government, they're a little bit, you believe, you know, they take their orders from the Kremlin, but it's because of money and bribes.
Yes. Yeah. They're selling their own interest. They're selling their interest of our own people for money, for bribes,
whatever
you can say that. Yes, exactly. And that's what happened, because in Armenia, most of our Armenians fled the country for this. They have so-called independence, but they're not independent at all. That depends on the Russian regime, of Russian fascist regime. It's they're doing the same things as Adolf Hitler did in back to 1930s.
It's pretty scary. It's Stalin too.
They're expanding. You know, tensions and expanding. They try to grab the territory. That's why they went to Ukraine, so-called. You know. To help the Russian-speaking people in Ukraine. This is nonsense, because even the Russian-speaking people in Ukraine fight against Putin now. So this is nonsense. They have no such things there. But in Armenia, they always keep Armenia as colonized. They keep us a colony.
Right, right. So, because that's what I find fascinating. I want to touch on that about, because I do think a lot of people in the U.S., have a pretty dismal view of Vladimir Putin. They like the Russian people and wish that they had a better leader. And I know you don't like him, so I thought that would be interesting. We can talk a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, I got your point. This is not this is not so simple as people think. It's not because of you, what you like, what you dislike.
Yeah.
I used to live there for many years. I can tell you, that regime, they have very powerful propaganda. And this propaganda tried to dictate what people should expect from that, you know, so that they try to tell their own people, to Russians, that everybody enemies, like USA enemy, you know, Germany, everything, all Europe, everybody is enemy to Russians. So we have to fight. That's what Putin, message.
We need to
control, we need to invade, to prevent NATO expansion, to prevent so-called. So this is racism, how you call that, fury.
Yeah,
it's the same thing as Adolf Hitler tried to do.
Ethnocentric nationalism, kind of things like that. And
The problem, even if somebody overthrown that regime, I don't think any positive sign going to happen. You know why?
Why is that?
I can tell you why. Because the Russian people itself, let's say 75-85%, almost 90, they brainwash.
Yeah.
They just buying what government telling them.
Well,
they believe that.
Yeah, and I mean,
and they hate everyone. Believe me.
And I think
they look at the Western civilization on other nations like a secondary, like a second class. They discriminate.
Well, and I think what's interesting is that, I'm a pretty democratic guy. I'm not a giant fan about Donald Trump. I think he latched on to some of that same thing that is a very Hitlerian thing, which is the idea that the more problems that people have, the more you blame the other people. So the more that he drives Russia outside of the national or the international circle of countries, the more their country is not good. But he's doing okay. He's rich as everybody, you know, in his inner circle. But then he can take that same situation of the poverty of the Russians and blame it on everybody else. I mean, that's kind of correct, right? It's always the fault of the other countries is what I think Putin does.
They have a hatred theory. They don't like anyone.
Yeah.
And they're just talking about itself. But they don't tell the real fact. Like, even if we're talking about Armenian colonized territory, they start doing that not today. They start doing that even when Nikolai Tsar was existing before he was overthrown in 1917. He was practicing the same thing,
right?
Killing people, doing massacre, and even he sent a greeting. His general sent a greeting to Turkey, at that time, to killing Armenians. They brave them to do that.
And
so going back to USA, I think USA now in very hard situation because they have to act for that all that threats which coming from let's say from Russia. I guess it's nothing else. Oh, not only Russia. I think it's Erdogan also extremely dangerous because they try to talk with Putin to make split the territory and between Russia and Turkey, because over there, if you're talking about Asia, so-called Uzbekistan, then Kyrgyzstan and other former Soviet Union republic, they're all Turks. They speak Turkish language, different dialect. So he tried to grab everything what he could. But if back to your question about USA, I think USA split now. And this is give advantage also to Putin, because when we talk about who's good, who's bad, Republican, Democrats, it give him advantage because the USA is it's divided, and it's divided big way. So every news, every TV channel, for example, I don't have TV no more, but I watch for news on YouTube channel, okay? And they only talking about that, pro-Trump or pro-Biden.
Right, right. It's a conflict is what sells from TV and the media, and if they have a like a boxing match, like a two, one against the other, it's easier to manage than to say all the many opinions.
It's easy, and they don't. They should understand that it's give advantage to that guy sitting in Kremlin, because he likes that when the country is divided and they start to fight with each other, it's give him advantage.
No, I agree. And so for the second part of the show here, let's talk a little more about yourself as an artist, because I don't want to talk always about politics also. So you had lived in Russia, you divorced your wife. I think you were in America and then back to Russia. That was an interesting chapter in your life. Isn't that correct? You lived in America before you went back to Russia for a while with your wife.
Yes. I was living in USA, then I went there, I got a job, then I get married, and that's what happened. And I'm divorced now, but that experience I got working over there, So I knew Russia now much more than if I never used to live there. Wow. That's why I can tell what people think. Plus, I speak perfect Russian.
Yeah.
So I speak three languages. So yes. So I can make my own judgment on that.
And as a musician, that's been able to help you travel to a lot of places, because music is a very international language. So that's where you've been a professional musician most of the time when you lived in these other places, I assume, right?
Yes. Yeah. I was orientated on music even when I started. Studied music when I was 7 years old, and I was on influence of my father, because my father was very great musician.
Yep.
And he taught me a lot of things in terms of folk music, Armenian music. This discipline that you can't get in even if you get a master's degree on music, they're not teaching you to that, because they're teaching you classical music and Western classical music. But besides that, it's music, and they implement a different approach, different technique. And I learned a lot of things from my father, David Irian. His name is David Irian. Yeah, like I said, he passed away 3 years ago. And this is, I was an influence of my father most of the time. We used to play together. I was playing on piano when he has a concert, touring in USA, Canada. And so we went to a lot of places.
And is it possible for the viewers that we can now put a part of some of your music into the show? So let's take a look at that for a second, then we'll come right back. Thank you. So we're back here with Gregory. And I also wanted to, I mean, the music's great, but we did want to also talk about how you've been a pretty prolific short filmmaker. A lot of times you started out, I think it was year 2000 or so, doing documentaries. Some of it's out on the street when you were living in Russia. It's some interesting stuff, some artistic stuff, kind of experimental film. So if you want to tell the viewers a little bit about that, we can also see some clips of it in a minute and kind of see what your films have been about.
Sure, yes. You know, before I start making movies, so I came to the idea to start making movies, I was liking to see art, like so-called video art or art house movies. I grew up on those movies like Federico Fellini, you know, Serge Parajanov, great Armenian filmmaker, then Tarkovsky, you know, Andrei Tarkovsky, then some French, Jean-Luc Godard, he just passed away a few days ago, and so on. And I like silent movies, actually, Charlie Chaplin. That's what I was watching all the time since my youth, you know, since my childhood. Right. So I was always watching Charlie Chaplin's movies. I liked them. So 2000, you said, right? Yeah, in 2000, I started making my first films, independent films. So I started with documentaries. Then I did video art films. Then I turned into experimental, and later than that, I started making experimental fiction films, short films. You know, I made about 20 short films, include documentaries, include video art, music videos, and fiction films.
Yeah, it sounds, and you've played these in other countries and in America, and is that something that do you love it as much as music? It's different. How does that compare to your artistry with your instrument?
Yeah, I think it's music is the most important things of any film, even short film or fiction film. I think music is very important. That's the problem. You can make a good film, but if it's not music not fit, then it's you ruin the film. So music is one of the most important things compared to filmmaking. That's my opinion, and not only my opinion.
Oh yeah.
But mostly what I did, you know, I have all freedom to do whatever I want because nobody tell me what to do. Because I was independent, completely independent. That's why maybe independent films is not what commercial films because there is the producers, the money investment. And they can dictate what to do, how to do. So I got all freedom, and I did whatever I could do.
Sure. Well, let's give the viewers a chance to take a look at some of the films. So we'll now go ahead and take a look at some clips from the films, and you can see the full films of these at. Can you tell the audience where they can find all of your films? I know on Vimeo and on YouTube and.
Yes, correct. It's very easy to get that films if you just print my first and last name on YouTube. You can get the link to my channel, you know, Gregory Ayryan, A-Y-R-I-Y-A-N. And that way you get to my channel, you know, you can subscribe to my channel and watch music. Almost every day I play the music. Even I'm using my phone, I play the music, you know.
That's cool.
And but besides that, if you go to popular videos, you can find a lot of films.
And we will link to that at the bottom of the screen. So let's take a look at some clips of some of those films. We'll come back. We'll wrap it up with Gregory. Stick around for that. Thank you. right back here with Gregory. So we're closing up, Gregory. I appreciate it so much. Thanks for your time. I think the viewers learned a ton about what's been going on internationally. And just want to tell everybody what you're doing nowadays, and I think they're going to want to look you up on social media.
What I'm doing the teaching job, you know, because of COVID, it's mostly it's online teaching. I'm teaching violin and teaching piano.
Thank you very much, Gregory. I really enjoyed talking to you. Have a good afternoon, and I'll talk to you soon. Thanks a lot, folks. Take care. Good night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.